Welcome to the Flyover Ministry Podcast, a practical youth ministry podcast for small church leaders by small church leaders. We are grateful that you have joined us for our journey through ministry-related topics that we hope help equip and encourage you as you serve Jesus wherever you are.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Dan.
And I'm Jordan.
And this is Flyover Ministry. Hello! Maybe you're listening to this, and I realize the timing of this, and I know how podcasts work. You're probably listening to this on your way out to the Fly Convention. It's probably late at night. The students are in bed, relatively on your bus, or maybe you're a group that's breaking the trip up, and you're driving minivans, and you're just ready to collapse, and you're just listening to the sweet, sweet sounds of Dan and Jordan as you drift off into dreamland. And if that's the case, have a good night. Thanks for tuning in briefly. Hopefully you can rewind this episode and listen to the contents of this, because we're going to be talking about breaking up cliques. And students, not just students, but everybody tends to gravitate towards people their own age or even of their own personality. And that is not entirely or even remotely accurate to what Christian fellowship ought to be or ought to genuinely look like. So we are going to be talking a little bit about that today as we continue and actually wind up ending our arc on the generational gaps and how we can close those and how we can connect our people with one another. If you are on your way out to the Fly Convention, come and see Jordan and myself. We'll be wandering around, not aimlessly, but we'll be there. Do we have any more of the Flyover Ministry podcast stickers?
I was just going to ask you if
I might have a bag. More. Yes, actually, as I say that, I see the bag. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We have 5. The first 5 people to come and see me or Jordan will receive the remaining Flyover Ministry stickers, the first run of our promotional material, the only things that we have paid for to promote this podcast.
According to the laws of supply and demand, we'll forget about the demand side and just focus on supply. They're extremely valuable.
Very limited run on these. Yeah. So if you would like a podcast sticker, we've got those for you. So looking forward to seeing you out there in person, Jordan. I know that we just got off of our annual conference as a church fellowship, and we saw each other there in person. But we are really excited for this week of ministry that is coming up. But let's get on to today's episode arc here and wrap up this month as we talk about breaking out of the cliques within our own age groups.
So one thing to acknowledge as we start this is that cliques happen. And I don't think it's anything, like, sometimes we can attribute motives that aren't necessarily there, and we can say it's all ill intent, and that's not necessarily the case. But you just think about people that you share affinities with, right? So not everybody in my group is interested in a 6-hour-long board game, but there are some that are. And so I might gather with those students regularly to play this game, and we might have inside jokes from this, we might have conversations from this, and other people might feel like they're excluded. Now, that's kind of a silly example, but I mean, you can extrapolate that over many different things, whether it's video games, sports, teams, whatever. And so you might have groups that kind of just share similar interests and therefore continue to gather and talk about these interests, where someone who is not all that interested is kind of feeling on the outside. And I will pull at your heartstrings, everyone, and say, this is my life around anybody who likes baseball, because they have things to talk about, and I am not in that sphere. So,
yeah.
I just broke Dan's heart. But
I enjoy baseball. I enjoy watching it. I do not actively go out. I couldn't tell you the last time I watched a professional baseball game or listened to one. I'll double check scores and whatnot, but I don't keep track of players or rosters or anything like that. But I know there are people who do. So I would say I'm a bigger fan of baseball than Jordan, or keep closer tabs on it.
That's a pretty low bar.
That's a pretty low bar. Both of us, we are both of us. I mean, you like tennis. I'm not huge into tennis. And that's sports. I don't know. I just never got into it. I will ask a clarifying question, though.
Yeah.
Which board game is 6 hours long that your youth group kids enjoy?
Axis and Allies.
Yeah. Would you believe I've never played that?
I wouldn't find that hard to believe.
I think it's the hurdle of 6 hours that I just can't get past.
It's so good, and it goes so fast, though. It doesn't feel like 6 hours, if I can say that. And, like, the reality is, I think this might be a turnoff for some people, too. The reality is that 6 hours takes, it's about five turns. It could be five, as few as five turns.
Ugh.
or more. But, anywho... especially if you're just starting players. But anyways,
I'll bring a book. I mean, I'll catch up on Flyover Ministry podcast while you take your turn.
There you go. But the thing is, like, as other people are taking their turn, you have to pay attention because it changes your potential strategies. It's risk on multiple levels of steroids. Because risk, you're just stuck with, like, your units do the same thing, and it's all about amassing units. But this is all, like, each unit has different strengths and weaknesses, and you got to use them strategically, and there's costs involved and economics, and yeah. I don't need to get into the whole board game, but anyways.
Well, you're halfway into it.
I am. But that's because I'm a part of that board game clique. But, and you see this happening across age groups, too. Like, a Sunday morning, just take a casual observation. Do people not have assigned seats, but you can tell who's there and who's not just by where people are sitting, whether it's in the service or during fellowship time, right? So you look at that and you see that this is, it's just natural thing that we gravitate towards our groups. And I've seen this over multiple congregations, multiple states, multiple cultures, but that's been consistent.
Right. I will point out here that when it comes to noticing things like that, that's a lot easier to observe when you're in a smaller church. You have, I feel like whenever we have somebody come and visit or somebody that we haven't seen for a while, they are just swarmed and almost overwhelmed and kind of scared, maybe to the point of not coming back. Like, get them! And everybody just attacks. In larger churches, that's going to be harder to notice, I think, and maybe even easier to ignore in larger churches. And I want to be careful saying this too, because I know that I know plenty of larger churches than the ones that both you and I attend, Jordan, that actively try and avoid that try and break up the cliques and try and have everybody worship as one cohesive body instead of putting people into silos. Like, this is this age group and you're over here, and you don't want to break people up into demographics and their interests, but still acknowledging that people have different interests, different hobbies. You know, you might have people in your church that are just really into fishing, and you might like fishing, but, you know, they've got a tackle box for every single day and, you know, the fancy boats and everything like that. And you're just, that's just not me. You might be the person that likes, you know, old farm equipment, thinking of our ministry context. And you know what? I'm not steam certified. I don't know how to drive these steam engines. But there are people who actually do enjoy that. So I think it's easier to ignore this in larger churches, and just the caution for us to be aware of this, that the more people you have in your church, it's going to be harder to see these different cliques, because people are still having fellowship with one another. There's lots of people to have fellowship with. It seems like the attitude of larger churches, at least from my perspective, could be that since Christian fellowship is happening, that nothing is particularly wrong, right? So long as people are being together, so long as they are drawing closer to one another, what's the big deal? There's really nothing to be fixed or amended, or, you know, cliques happen, but, you know, at least they're happy together. What's the problem? And for those of us that are in smaller churches, we can't afford that. What you have is the community that you have, with all of its different levels of interests and hobbies and giftings, it is on us in Christian maturity to try and be together as the people of God. And that's what we're talking about today, is to try and figure out a way to not just acknowledge our differences, but to respect those differences. And, you know, once Jordan, when people start talking about baseball, right, like your brothers, I think your brothers are some of the bigger baseball fans I know. So what do you do then when they start talking about baseball? Do you just kind of zone out? Do you go to a safe spot in your mind and strategize your next move in Axis and Allies?
Yeah, I think about our podcast outlines and smile. No, for the sake of them, there are times where I playfully antagonize them. And I remember there was a time when I accused my brother of idolatry at some point.
This was
back in the day when we were in school. So that was fun. But yeah, you can be, I think, charitable towards others in that you don't have to make them subscribe to your interests. You can also try to be interested in them too. So I might ask a question and I might just be making a fool of myself, but I'm trying to enter into their world a little bit. And so as you talked about, like the difference between large congregations and small congregations, so like mega church, average size church of 70 to 100 people or so. And I think this might even be something that we have the upper hand as a smaller congregation with, because when it's coming to the community of the body of Christ, there it's a smaller pool, but we don't have to try to manufacture a smaller group. Like you think about the mega churches and how often they go to small group ministries and how they push that. In some ways, they're almost like making cliques of these groups because they just can't know everybody, right? But in a smaller congregation, we don't necessarily have that. But we can still see the impact of cliques and the reason for cliques being an issue. It's not that you can't have closer groups of people. We see the levels of engagement with Jesus and his disciples. But it's the problem comes when it's at the exclusion or the unhealth of the unity of the body. And that's the big issue. And so with a smaller congregation, it's hard if you're having a conflict with someone. And, you know, the room chills when you pass by each other, right? It can be difficult because that also rubs off on other people. And you're probably related to half, and they're related to the other half that you're not feuding against. But that's just how it goes sometimes. Or with the click stuff, the challenge does get back to the unity of the body and the intentionality of discipleship and ministry that we've talked about. So for example, a lot of the stuff that we've talked about in this month, connecting older generations with our students, our teens, connecting our teens with younger students, and creating these meaningful interactions in discipleship, we have to talk about it because the cliques kind of preclude that from happening. You've got your older people who keep on talking with their older people about what the older people talk about, the teens talking about the things the teens talk about with their phones. And we don't have these mixes, and that's unhealthy. And so to move in a healthy direction, we need to address this. And so how do we address this? That's the kind of killer question for us before
how
today.
How indeed? I mean, that's kind of what we're after here, right? Like you said, this is going to be harder to do in smaller churches and even in larger churches if you are in that setting and ministry context, because what tends to happen is people like to surround themselves with the things that make them comfortable. Think about kind of the nests. You make a nest of comfort. You buy food that you like. You create custom playlists for music to listen to. You can even have, like if you've got a video, if you're Amazon Prime or Netflix or Disney Plus or whatever, right? They will recommend you videos that you might like based off of what you watched before. So we surround ourselves with the things that we are comfortable with. And Christian fellowship invites us and calls us into areas where we may not be as comfortable. Where, guess what? You are going to have to wait for your turn on Axis and Allies, even though you're uncomfortable, for the sake of fellowship. I do get what you're saying, though, Jordan, right? With things like that, because it's not my particular cup of tea, but I know that our people like it. And being with the people matters more to me than what it is that we are doing, Right? I would rather, it's going to shock many people here. Maybe we'll lose some listeners. I'm not a huge fan of hockey, but the people here are. So for the sake of spending time with people, we will go and watch high school hockey, you know, and do I understand what's going on? No, I'm the idiot in the stands that's asking, I don't know what that hand gesture the ref just made is and what that means. And everybody's going, oh, sympathetically going, oh, I have no idea what just happened, but I guess I'm supposed to be upset right now.
Here but, I was thinking that icing was something to put on cake.
I don't even understand what that means. So,
ooh, yeah. Puns that are past your understanding.
No, I know that icing is a term. I don't know what it means.
When you shoot the puck from behind one blue line to across the other blue line.
All right.
Without it being I don't know exactly, but it's a thing.
You don't know either.
I knew that much. I knew it was blue lines. So thinking through, like, where do we start? And I think this isn't just because theology is great, but I think we want to start with the foundation of theology. And because you might have somebody ask the question, why should I care about this? Because this is comfortable. Like you said, your nests of comfort, right? Why should I disrupt my nest for the sake of somebody else? Or why should I ask students to disrupt their nests, right? And I think the first thing we have to say is that this is important to us because it's important to Jesus. And so you go to, you know, John 17, where Jesus is doing his high priestly prayer. And his whole thing is like, God, may they be one as we are one. And so then we start thinking about the craziness of the Trinity. I thought there's three separate things that are together one and the perfect fellowship that exists there. And Jesus is praying, Lord, would they have that because we have this? And in that way, may they mirror us and represent us to the world. And that's crazy unity, but that's mm-hmm. his desire. That's his prayer. And that can't happen if we're all together individually separate. Right. And so we start there and say, this is the reason is evangelism, because this is to picture the world or to be a picture of the world. Jesus even says that the world might know that you have sent me into the world. So it's directly connected to how the world interprets the reality of Christ. So those are huge, huge reasons for why.
Well, and even, I mean, look at the disciples and how different they are. And Jesus does not just pick a group of people that are all the same occupation or same age or same hobbies. He has a tax collector, mm-hmm. and then he has a zealot. Right? Two people that were diametrically opposed in worldview and occupation and mission. Right? One's collecting taxes for what the people of Israel considered enemies of the state, and the other was one who was actually fighting as militia against that group of people. And here they are in the kingdom of God serving and working together. And that's, it's incredible.
Like, you could probably guess who their targets would be if they were on opposite teams for dodgeball.
Oh, yeah. Everybody going for Matthew. Everyone goes for Matthew. That's the thing. So it's an incredible picture, right, of like, even when you're recruiting for a ministry team, not just people like, oh, yeah, these people are going to get along just great. Jesus goes and picks people that they're not going to get along at all. Mm-hmm. But the mission is what's going to unify them.
Yeah.
The gospel is what is the unifying factor in all of our ministries. So being intentional about creating those times. It's also going to be important for you to build these kind of activities into your ministry, right? It's not, the end goal is not your activities. It's not these events. These are places and times for fellowship to happen. You are creating an opportunity for that community to be made, and even for certain communities to be broken down a little bit, to break down those walls. So what are the things that you are putting into your ministry schedule that allows the people of God to not only fellowship with one another, but get to know one another even better so that you can become a more unified group?
And I think this is like I'll just plug, because we're in the summer season now, what are the strengths of camps and retreats? Because it can get people out of those contexts and away from some of those things that kind of perpetuate the cliques, I guess, in a little bit, and create opportunities for them to be put together, especially if you have some sort of random small group generator where you're taking the people and then you split them up into different groups than they're normally with, so they get to know others. And you know, you can also have activities, be intentional about things that allow people to work together and allow different skill sets to shine. So where you are, you know, we talked about this way back when we did our episode on games, and we did like guts, brains, and brawn or something like that, where it was all about like different tasks, and one would be more physical, one would be more intellectual, one would be like your bravery, what are you going to be willing to put up with. But the whole point was that you highlight different abilities for other people to work with, right? And you know, there's nothing like a group project too. Seriously though, praying for one another intentionally with purpose is a huge thing that breaks down barriers too. When you actually care for someone, and I think that God uses prayer to shape our heart towards someone, right? So if I'm praying for someone for a year, I don't think I'm going to look at that person the same way than before that year happened.
I think the praying for each other really jigsaws well into a ministry that we've talked about in previous episodes, not just in this arc, but in previous arcs as well. The Pray For Me campaign, where you don't have just adults praying for leaders or your students, but you have, like you said, students praying for students. And they have actually some pretty good resources to help guide, like a prayer guide, student discipleship manual. I'm looking at it actually right now. It's a discipleship journal for them to work through. And if you were to encourage them to work through this together, to share with each other what they are experiencing, what they are learning about themselves, what they have been learning about their relationship with Jesus, I think opportunities for them to be able to share with each other breaks down a lot of those barriers as well. Here's a question too. This is cheesy, as our outline says. Have you ever been a part of these encouragement circles? These are the words you put on.
Yes. The first person that I worked with in youth ministry, Michelle Olson, previously Satrin, she loved these things. And she had rules in place too. If you know Michelle, she is a very positive, enthusiastic person, but it's not manufactured. Like, it's very genuine. So she had rules like, if you are dissing somebody or criticizing somebody, you owe them 5 compliments right afterwards, and they have to be genuine. But the point is that so if you're going to say something negative, you have to make up for it by doing 5 positive things. But the encouragement circle, I don't pull it out super often, but it is a great thing to do at camps, and it is kind of cheesy. But like, what happens is you have one person starts, and then you pick somebody else in the group, and you, to their face and in front of everyone, say, I want to say this thing about you that I really admire or that I've seen happen that's just really great. And then the person who is picks somebody else, and then the first person who starts has to go last, so they're the last one, because otherwise the circle gets broken. You get everybody to participate, and they're in charge of picking who it is. And sometimes it's been, you know, connections that I never would have imagined, like this person would have anything to say to this other one. If you have a lot of girls, there can be tears, and so the boys can be uncomfortable. But like, I've done this at Fly during youth group night, it's something that we don't often take the time to intentionally go beyond surface level encouragement in others. And I think this creates something that really does that. And it can be emotional, where you just are receiving affirmation. And it really depends on the group. So you want a couple of people to start who are going to go deeper than just, you really had great shoes this week, and I loved how you kept them clean. Like, that's not what we're going for. But to be able to say, like, I've seen you really wrestle with God, about what he wants for you. And I just love that heart, you know, those kind of comments. Mm-hmm. And when you see that and when you're looking for them, that's kind of a part of the culture. I think that really can be a unifying factor for a group together too.
Yeah. Nothing unifies a group like being uncomfortable together. So if the girls are tearing up, you know, sit through that. Sit through that with them. I've been in these where the guys start tearing up. And that becomes like, goes from being uncomfortable to being actually pretty powerful. To seeing the guys having those walls broken down and being vulnerable with each other. As we start thinking about wrapping up here, not to make just a rapid, sudden shift in focus, I realize that what we're talking about is groups that are willing and students that are willing to even be broken up in cliques. Also speaking to adults in that regard, don't think that we're not excluding you adults from this as well. But Jordan, what would you say to a group that maybe has some students that just are not on board with this vision of ours to break up these cliques? What if you are met with just ongoing resistance from your people as you attempt to do this?
That's a great question. And I would say this goes back to the foundations that we had talked about before, and that's recruiting people for prayer. Because if you're meeting intense opposition to something like this within the group, I think it shows that there's something else going on. You know, at the very minimum, that means that they're not willing to seek out what Christ wants for them. And I think that's indicative of a heart condition that might be going on there, right? And, you know, there could be multiple reasons for this. It's easy to say this on a podcast where we're talking, we're friends, we're not thinking about, like...
We're friends? Really?
I think that's what Facebook told me anyways. Aww. But we're not talking about, like, the feud that has gone on that was built out of a tragedy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in those moments, sometimes it will take supernatural work for reconciliation and redemption to happen. But the end is still the same. Like, the goal is still the same. That this is something that God wants for us. And so even if it is hard, we want to see what we can. And maybe there's some mediation that's involved. Maybe it's bringing in others and external perspectives, but I think, starting with prayer, because this is a spiritual issue, I think would be where I'd go.
Mm-hmm. I think to be really clear here and just to remind our people that, you know, you are always welcome here. These attitudes, this posture that you have, it is not, and we need to amend that. And to be really clear on that focus, to say, we're not kicking people out, but we do need to address sin and hard-heartedness in our communities.
So if this feels like it's a hard ending, it's going to be a hard landing just because we had some technical stuff that happened, and so our flow has been interrupted. But despite the interruption of our flow, we hope that you guys have a wonderful week, and if you are at Fly, we'd love to see you there. And if you can't be, we wish you could be, and maybe someday or in the future we'll see you there. But regardless of where you're at, we pray that you'd go in peace and serve the Lord.
Thanks for listening to Flyover Ministry. You can find, follow, and give feedback on our Instagram and Facebook pages at Flyover Ministry. You can also get in contact with us on our Gmail account, flyoverministrypodcast@gmail.com. You can find other episodes that we've recorded on iTunes and Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, and please feel free to share them with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.